You are listening to the Smart Betting Club podcast with me, your host, Peter Ling. For the very latest on what it takes to make your betting profitable, including the experts you should follow, please visit the SBC website at smartbettingclub.com. My guest on this latest episode is Ryan Bruno, also known as the Smart Sports Trader, and someone who has made a six-figure profit betting and trading over the past 5 years. Starting out with match betting, bonuses, and arbing, he evolved his betting to using tipsters and to more recently onto the betting exchanges as he lost his final soft bookmaker account in 2022. His is a story of dedication, patience, and the nous to build up a bankroll and develop what he bets on and how he bets based on the challenges faced as he built up a profit. Combining his betting with a full-time job, he was able to make almost £40,000 from his punting in 2022 alone, and with a renewed focus on pre-match and value trading, is gunning for more of the same via the exchanges in 2023. Ryan is a source of inspiration for those of you looking for an example of how to make money betting in today's restrictions-heavy climate. So sit back and enjoy my interview with Ryan Bruno. In today's podcast, I have the pleasure of being joined by the smart sports trader, Ryan Bruno. Welcome to the podcast, Ryan. How are you?
Very good, mate. Thank you. Yourself?
Yep. Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on. And I imagine a large proportion of those people listening to this will be really intrigued to hear your story today, as you are a really good example of how with hard work and the right approach, you can make a profit betting, even if it takes you a little while to succeed. So let's start off, first of all, with some intros, who you are and what you currently do in the betting world.
Yes, yeah, so my name's Ryan and I've been betting, I'd say seriously, for probably about 7 years now. I still work full-time as well, but I'm kind of lucky with the type of work that I do. I work as a carer with people with disabilities, but due to the nature of the job, I basically go and live with them for like 2 days, and then that leaves me with 5 days off. So in terms of betting and working full-time, it's kind of ideal, really. Yeah, and I also run the blog smartsportstrader.com, which I've been running for maybe about 6 years, which it's got some guides on there with the strategies that I use, but it's more or less a kind of a P&L blog at the moment.
And you've done quite well, haven't you? I think you started off, I was reading on your website, it says, like most people, I struggle to make money from the sports betting markets at first. Obviously, that's changed since then. Talk me through, you know, that process and that journey you've been on.
Yeah, so I probably started, it's got to be over 10 years ago now. I was at university at the time. I was looking for a way to make money and I found an article. I think I just went on Google and I typed like how to make money online, something very generic. And I found poker and I was reading about all these amazing young poker players at the time that were making lots of money. So you had like Tom Dwan, there's a guy called Victor Blom, a young Swedish guy who just kind of risen through the ranks. Poker was on TV and it, as a young lad, it was just really exciting. So I started reading a lot about poker. I was going on the 2+2 forums a lot and I kind of really just delved into that. And that's kind of how I got started with betting, because I ended up getting a Sky Poker account, which had a sports book. I started using that to bet on MMA, and the markets were really, really soft. If you go back like 10 years ago, they were ridiculously soft. So even as somebody that didn't really know what he was doing in terms of like getting value from the markets, I had quite a good run initially. And that's what made me look at sports betting.
I see. Yeah, I think a lot of people I speak to, their gateway into this was poker.
All right.
They started with poker and then it obviously moves onto just general sports betting. And certainly I think a lot of listeners will probably relate to the fact that it used to be a lot easier to make profit. And then obviously you started off your blog, The Smart Sports Trader, and you're doing a variety of things to make a profit. What was the reason for setting up the blog? Was it to give some kind of accountability or, you know, to make sure that you stuck to the narrative about what you did?
Yeah, so I think it has definitely done that. I don't know if that was my intention initially, but running the blog has definitely kind of kept me on the straight and narrow and kind of focused on sports betting. But it's more coming from the poker world. I really enjoyed on the 2+2 forum, there's a part of it called Poker Goals and Challenges, and you would see people kind of start at the right at the bottom at like NL5. And then in 3 years time, you would see that they've made themselves, they've progressed all the way and they're playing at like NL1K or something, you know, these really high level games. So I wondered why, once I got into sports betting, why there wasn't really something like that. When I came across two websites, there was Daily25, which I think you'll know about because I think you've interviewed Steve a long time ago. And I think there's the Portfolio Investor as well, which I think is that Rowan's old blog. And
that's right.
Yeah. So yep. I came across them. So I saw that there were people doing it, but there wasn't really a lot of people doing it. And I thought, A, it would be quite popular and there might be some revenue from it. And I also thought that it would open up the ability to like test tipsters out and test services out without having to pay money. So then that money wouldn't be going out of my bankroll and it'd kind of allow me to grow my bankroll at a quicker rate, I suppose.
It's a, you know, shrewd way of doing things, certainly. You play it down there, make a little bit of money, but we'll get into the figures because you
put up a post about what you did in 2022, but it certainly seems from the last year, you're making more than the average UK salary from your side income from betting. Is there any part of you that wants to do that full time, or do you like the way it just fits in? And you know, if you make a good profit from it one year, that's great. And if it doesn't, well, you're not reliant on that to pay the bills.
Yeah, so I've got kids and a wife and obviously a mortgage and stuff. So we're betting, even though over like the last 5 years, I think I've made more from betting than I have from a job. I just like that security of having a job that pays the bills every single month. Like I know that my mortgage is covered, you know, I know that everything's going to be okay. So if I lose a grand in a day, it doesn't destroy me and I'm not really thinking about it. I can move on quite quickly because it's completely separate from what pays the bills. And I also enjoy my job as well. I'm quite lucky in that respect. And I like going to my job and I like the social side of it. At the moment, I'm really happy with the balance that I've got between betting and working. So I just think I'm quite lucky with the job that I've got, really.
Yeah, of course. So if you enjoy your job and also it allows you to do this when you're not at work, then certainly you can see the appeal. How much time does what you do in terms of betting take up? You mentioned you do it on your days off, but is that all day on those days, or are you still doing it on your phone when you're meant to be working? How does it fit together?
Yeah, so again, with the nature of my job, where you basically are living with someone for 2 days, they don't need you 24 hours a day, so they don't need you every moment. So there might be like an hour in the day. Well, there's more than that. There's probably 3 or 4 hours in a 24-hour shift where I can kind of just do what I would like to do and then kind of pop in with the person that I work with and just make sure that they're doing all right and they don't need me for anything. So I can take my laptop and take my phone and I can get work done there. So again, it's like I'm lucky with the job that I have, as it allows me to check the markets and check on my bets and see if there is any value around. So again, yeah, I know that a lot of people don't have that. So yeah, I am lucky in that regard.
And then those days that you are off, is that something you spend in most of the time in front of the computer or working on this, or?
Yeah, so on my days off, obviously Saturdays tend to be the busiest day. Yeah. During the week, I'll take my kids to school and then I'll normally hop on the computer at like 10 o'clock and I'll probably work till about 12 o'clock and then have a little break. And then I'll probably go back on for like an hour before I pick the kids up. And then when the kids are back, I'll probably spend like another 2 hours. So I'd say like I spend like 5 hours on a busy day, but if there's not a lot on, then I might just do that 2 hours in the morning and then have the rest of the day off. It depends kind of what's going on.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. You know, and also you have that flexibility. So if you want to take the day off, then you absolutely can do that, can't you? And you know, that's obviously quite appealing from that aspect. So let's talk about what you're doing at the moment. And we might as well start with your post at the start of January this year, January 2023, which was a summary of what you did in the previous year in 2022. You labeled it a very positive year with a profit of just short of £40,000. How was 2022 for you? I looked at your profit chart. It seems to be a pretty steady profit, although most at the front end of the year, but still, you know, there's not huge amounts of ups and downs in terms of monthly performance.
Yeah, so I got off to kind of a ridiculous start at the beginning of last year where I thought I kind of cracked it. I kind of figured it out and I was going to be making some kind of very big sums. And I'm very happy with last year. It was a bit of a record year. But I think I obviously went through all my soft bookmaker accounts by March, decided that I just wanted to try and focus with the exchanges and trying to go that route. So yeah, I used up a lot of my Bet365 accounts. So during that time, they were putting a lot of boosts on. I think it was when they'd introduced the football boosts on pretty much every market, all the English markets and the lower leagues. And there was just like a ridiculous amount of value. You get like 20 or 30 value bets just from Bet365 on a Saturday. So I made the most of that. And then I carried on betting with the exchanges and kind of trying to figure out how to get value bets down on the different exchanges and understanding how there's kind of different opportunities with the exchanges. So like with Betfair, you've got kind of more of a true exchange. And then with like Matchbook and Smartkets, they're more populated by Arbors and Match Betters. So I was just figuring out how to take advantage of that, basically. I did figure it out and it worked really well early on. And then things do seem to have petered off. And I think there has been a few changes in the markets and like Bet365 in particular, they've moved a lot of their boosts. So that can affect some of the exchange markets as well. But I have to be careful. I don't want to give everything away. Otherwise, I'll just be battling for those markets.
Of course, yeah. You know, that's part of my job to try and tease out as much information as my guests will allow me to get out of them. But yeah, you know, obviously it seems to be for most funds, it's the evolution, isn't it? Perhaps they can take the low-hanging fruit from those soft bookmaker accounts, which sounds like you've lost all of yours, and then moving on to the exchanges and obviously boosts and things like that. Tell me about some of the strategies and things that you do then, because that's probably where people are wondering now. You mentioned there about the boost, but what else? Because I was reading you know, in your article, you talk about horse racing, you've got a few different services that you use and trading,
What strategy or what area provides you the most profit?
Yeah, so things have changed over the years. Like initially when I started, I was doing quite a bit of match betting and a bit of arbing. And then I was doing a lot of casino offers, but they've kind of dried up as time has gone on. So like you say, it's always kind of evolving and finding new edges. So at the moment, I'm doing kind of a lot of value betting, but I'd say it's kind of advanced value betting where you're kind of reading where the market is going, or you're picking up on patterns that indicate that a price is more likely to shorten than it is to drift. And like American bettors call this the top-down approach. That's where I heard it on the TradeMate podcast. I think you've probably interviewed some of the same guys, but they've had like Spanky and Haru. And I think even Jonas has talked about his kind of market-based approach. So listening to all of those guys talk about it, I understood what they were saying, and I tried to see if I could figure out if I could do it in some of the UK markets. And I have been able to do that and find kind of a few patterns that just reoccur, and like betting earlier in the markets. I just set myself up for Saturdays where I normally have a lot of positions on Saturdays by reading the markets earlier on. But yeah, again, I have to be careful not to put everything away, but that's a large part of what I do.
Yeah, so it's a lot of trial and error, exploring the markets, you know, doing your own research, I presume, reading articles. Has it been a matter of looking at it for a little while and then taking the plunge, or going in at small stakes and gradually increasing them as you become more confident in some of the strategies you find?
Yeah, so I think because I've been doing a lot of match betting and value betting and stuff like that before, I've kind of got an understanding of how the markets move. And then I just began to kind of understand all the different players in the markets, I suppose, when you've got arbers and match bettors and value bettors, and kind of how to work around that to kind of my own advantage and how to get value from that. So I use TradeMate Sports. I use their software to kind of give me an indication of where value is at the soft bookmakers. And then I still use OddsMonkey to just tell me what's going on at the exchanges. And then I also use OddsPortal, which you can look at like the historical odds movement on OddsPortal. So you can get an idea of like how the odds have moved at Bet365. So yeah, by kind of just understanding the market as a whole, just trying to find patterns which enable me to be the closing line, basically.
I see. No, that's fascinating. So you mentioned a few resources there. So that's OddsPortal. Is it OddsMonkey? There's a few others on your website as well. You've written some material on that for people who want to find out more. What about some of the other things that you're doing then? Perhaps those things that you're doing on the exchange, is it just the top-down approach and those strategies on the exchanges, or are there other things that you're using the, you know, likes of Betfair for?
Yeah, so I still do a bit of pretty much trading. Again, not as much. Like it used to be a lot easier with injury news, and sometimes you could just kind of wait for Twitter to release the lineup, and then an hour before the game, if you could spot that there was a player missing, you know, you could just profit from that. But it seems as time's gone on, that news gets released earlier to people who get in the market, which is good for them. But they get in the market a little bit early and they move those odds before that information has been released. So I'm still doing a bit of that, and I might pay someone to get like early team news sometimes, which sometimes is profitable. So I do a bit of that, and I've been doing some in-play trading as well, kind of looking the market again and just trying to find areas where I think there might be some bias, or like there might be a market panic. So let's say you've got like a favorite, they've played really well in the first half, so that's kind of compressed the odds and they've not really moved out by half time. But then you can see in the second half, let's say at 60 minutes, they're really struggling to break down the opposing team. Then from like a theoretical point of view, the market has to catch up almost from the first half. So I'll be putting a lay bet in. And then as the time goes on and the market kind of has to move a lot quicker, remove my liability. So I've been trying to like find strategies that will work in play as well. And what else am I doing? I'm using FDS Income as well. So
yeah, I was going to ask you, there's a few services you mentioned. FDS is one of them. I'm not familiar with them. So perhaps give me a little bit of breakdown on what they offer you.
Yeah, so FDS is just a service that it gives you a load of data. So it gives you historical odds, which you can look through. So you've got historical Betfair data for like the last five seasons. And then they've got a few different mathematical models as well. So been kind of playing about with that at the beginning of this season and getting like season-long strategies, and that's been working pretty well. I think this season I'm up about $2,000 using them. So not a huge amount, but I'm still kind of in the testing phase with this being my first season. But yeah, they're run by a guy who has done very well on Betfair. I think he's called Ian Erskine. It might be someone you might want to talk to, but he's quite well regarded and he's done well. And I've been quite happy using that. And then recently I just started using another guy's service just off Twitter, which is like a lay the draw service, and his historical results are pretty solid. So I'm testing that out for a season as well.
Is that the Bets and Beers?
That's right. Yeah, it's called Bets and Beers.
Yeah, great name.
Yeah,
that's great name. So you place the bets and then if you win, pay him with some beer money.
Well, that's the idea.
Yeah. So in terms of horse racing, I know you were following a few of the SBC guys. Is that all finished now with the removal of the last soft bookie account?
Yeah, so I was using No Photo Needed when he was the free tipster, and he had Kieran Ward as well. And I've probably followed a few others, Quentin Franks for quite a couple of years when I had Soft Bookmakers. So I used all of those and that went well. And Deathbet, I did really well from that when that was running, but unfortunately that closed at the beginning of the year. And then like the last 6 months, I just basically, the horse racing bets, they just started to kind of plummet. And because I was doing a lot more of my own betting and that was going really well, I decided that I didn't want to commit the time. I mean, the horse racing bets don't take a ton of time, to be honest. It might be like 20 minutes in the morning, but it's like 20 minutes every morning, basically. And sometimes I just kind of, when my other stuff is doing well and I'm making money, I just thought, you know, I can take time back for myself now. But I might go back and look at the horse racing stuff again. I'll just have to see what works the best with Betfair, really, and Smarkets and Matchbook.
It sounds like you have the right approach, though, because I feel like chatting to some people, you get so frustrated and so fixated on only one way to make a profit. And then if that route gets closed off, for example, if your accounts get closed, they can't move past that. They're constantly looking at ways of getting on. And speaking to some of the best punters I've spoken to on this podcast, it's like smashing edges as much as you can, because it's not going to be there forever. You're not going to be able to get on. Is that your approach to this? It's like, well, if it's gone, it's gone. I'll make the most of it while it's here.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. And like the betting landscape in the UK is not the greatest at the moment. In a way, it was like, if I can't make it work this year, just using exchanges and stuff, you know, I might move on to something else. Well, that was my fault last year, because although I could still pick up a few more accounts and stuff and work with friends, it was just getting harder and, you know, bookmakers can be a right pain to deal with. So I just thought I might be able to invest this energy and time into something which might be more profitable. That was kind of my fault. But then last year did go really well, fortunately. So yeah, I'm just going to kind of, like you say, it's just like if the edges are there and you're making money, I'm just going to kind of focus on that and not focus on what has been in the past.
And what type of qualities do you think you have or other people might need to make the most of this? Obviously, you need to be a good problem solver probably and also be able to, you know, to identify, understand the betting markets and to do a little bit of research, as obviously you have done, and to be patient, I imagine. Are those some of the qualities or any more that you think that, you know, somebody who wants to replicate what you do might benefit from?
Probably just to kind of be persistent as well, I suppose. Like it's easy with a lot of things just to give up when things are going well. But like when I first started, I wasn't making much money. I started off with match betting, where obviously, you know, you can't really lose money with match betting. But then when I was trying trading and betting, I was losing a few hundred and frustrated with it. But yeah, it's just kind of a bit of persistence and having an interest as well. So like listening to like the podcast that you do, the podcast that the TradeMate guys have done, and kind of listening to people that are already done what you're trying to achieve. So if you can listen to someone like, there's a guy in America called Spanky who's made millions, and there's several people that have done interviews that have, you know, made a lot of money through betting, listen to what they're saying. And you only need to pick up like two or three kind of key bits of information that they're saying that can really help your betting. So it's just, yeah, be persistent and show an interest as well. Like don't just listen to some dude on a forum that's telling you, you know, to back, I don't know, 1.5 favorites and roll over your stake or whatever. Like listen to somebody that's actually making money and actually doing what you're trying to achieve, because that's kind of where you're going to, that's where you're going to learn the most.
So good advice there, persistence and listen to the experts, certainly. You mentioned as well, I just want to get onto a few other topics. You mentioned match betting and Arbin casino bonuses. Is that all done now from a UK perspective?
I think on a big scale, it probably is. Like probably when I started, there was guys that were, they weren't multi-year accounting, but they were making like big money multi-accounting. Probably, you know, they were making maybe 10K a month and they probably have like five or six accounts. But like nowadays, even with five or six accounts, I don't think they're making like 10K a month. But I mean, the opportunity is still there. It's just smaller. And you can still do a little bit of Arbin. Like every now and again, I'll do some shop Arbin with Betfred. Like they might hang. I'll tell you, on MMA, occasionally they're a bit slow to update their odds. So you can get some arbitrage bets there. And obviously you can bet in shop, which is handy. So I have two Betfreds near me, which are like 10 minutes away. So I can go in and hit them if they offer any arbs. Then occasionally you do get arbs between exchanges as well. So yeah, you can do a little bit of it. But yeah, it's not the opportunity it was, but the opportunity is still there, but it's just smaller.
So the glory days have certainly gone when it comes to, I know there was quite a lot of match betting that went on maybe 5-10 years ago perhaps. And obviously people doing arbing and the casino bonuses. You also mentioned that MMA betting. So you are an MMA fighter, is that right? Or I don't know if you still do it.
So I was, like it's going back a while now. But about 10 years ago, before I had my kids, I was really into MMA. I was training a lot and I ended up competing and fighting. And then obviously I moved on to kind of like betting. You know, I've done pretty well over the long term, but last year was my first losing year I've had betting on MMA.
I see. Yeah, because that was my next question. Is obviously you have an interest in MMA betting, and you do. So if you've got a Discord forum, haven't you? You put up some of your bets. You're trying to keep a record on betting.gs. You've got a good record there, but obviously you had a losing one. What's the MMA market like in terms of betting on it?
So the liquidity has grown in it. It's a bit sharp. Like I say, the odds are sharper. They're definitely sharper, and probably with the American market kind of opening up, that's probably made them even more sharp, I would say. But I do think it's still a beatable sport, obviously. The only issue I have is like trying to get early on. Without soft bookmaker accounts or access to Pinnacle, you can't really bet early as there's just not money on the exchanges. And really, you only get decent money on the exchanges like a day or two before the fight starts, unless it's like a kind of Conor McGregor big mega fight. But yeah, I do think there's a lot of opportunity. Definitely in play as well. You can bet MMA in play. And I think that's where there's like the biggest value to be had, because it's such a quick sport, and you've only got a round. Between rounds, you've got like 1 minute. So you get like big fluctuations sometimes in the odds, and then there'll be bookmakers will be offering arbitrage bets as well, which means that like you get inflated prices on the exchange sometimes. So it's if you are like a fan of MMA and you're able to watch it live and bet live, then I think that's probably where the most opportunity is.
Yeah, especially we've got your experience that you have, you know, as a fighter yourself. You had Craig Edwards, professional snooker player. He talked about not necessarily just for snooker as well, actually for other sports like the elite. Mental challenges that elite sportsmen face. And obviously, if you know the nuances of a sport like MMA, because I ask because there's more people coming to me with an interest in betting on MMA as it grows in popularity, and the extension is it grows in the betting markets too. I also wanted, you did talk a little bit then about getting your bets on. We talked about exchanges and using shops. Are you also looking at any of the like sharp firms, like the Pinnacle of this world? Those guys, are you trying to spread into that area?
So I did use Pinnacle about 2 years ago through a broker called Asian Connect, but they changed the rules so that you couldn't deposit money onto their platform using Skrill or is it NetTeller, and they would only allow you to do it with cryptocurrency. And I'm not into cryptocurrency and I don't invest in it. So as soon as they did that, I just decided, you know, it's not worth it. I'll just try and get on with the exchanges. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't really bet in the Asian markets anymore.
Yeah, no, I heard that from someone else recently about Asian Connect only taking Bitcoin. So that's a shame. So other than that, it's obviously using exchanges, some sharp betting, but multi-accounting, I think some people ask about multi-accounting, but they don't realize perhaps the amount of logistical work that's involved with it. You've got money spread everywhere. You've got that trust issue perhaps with people doing it for you. That's not a route you wish to continue or you wish to go down. Or do you have any advice for people considering that approach?
Yeah, so I mean, I have worked with family members and friends before, but they were like close family members and friends. And then with the blog and stuff, I've had people reach out to say they'll kind of would like to work alongside me and stuff, but I don't really know these people. And it's like when you're betting in somebody else's name and you've got money in their account, that money is theirs basically. So, you know, if they want to screw you over, they can screw you over. So you do have to be careful with that. I mean, there's two other people that I work with who I trust who are also professional gamblers, and they'll help me get money on. But they're from other countries, actually. So it's quite good in the fact that their limits seem to be a lot better. So like I've got one guy who can help me get on in America and one guy that can help me get on in Australia. So their markets are kind of a little bit better than ours. So, but I wouldn't say it's multi-accounting. If I like a bet, I'll kind of share that information with them and they might help me get on. So that is something I do a little bit of, but not a ton. But yeah, if you do want to kind of go that route, I would just say like, you know, obviously do it with people you trust. Like,
of course, yeah. It seems like that's almost the better way to multi-account, working with other people, perhaps in other jurisdictions, because those markets might be quite different. I think it's like Betfair's, for example, their market in, let's say, in a European country, I don't know, like Italy, if they have a license there, I think they do, it will be possibly quite different to the English one. Just take like a Euro tournament or World Cup. There's all that that patriotic money back in England. I'm sure it might be the same in Italy, for example, but that certainly is a good suggestion there, talking and working with other people that perhaps on the same level as you. Whereas with the traditional view of multi-accounting, it would be getting an auntie to place the bet or open an account and then you do that. Whereas this one, it's more about working with other people and them helping you and you helping them. I do feel that networking aspect or that building up a group of people that you trust and perhaps they can give you some advice or help you and vice versa. That's very interesting. So from the aspect of the betting industry then and dealing with bookmakers, have you experienced issues in terms of payouts and winning bets? That seems to be a regular theme these days for many punters that aren't losers in terms of getting access to their money or being trusted or having all kinds of requests for identity documentation and what have you, just to get paid?
Yeah, so it's definitely become a bit more of a pain, like with kind of notarized documents and stuff like that, which is, it was one of the reasons why I just decided that I wanted to focus on the exchanges more, just because I don't, like you say, there's a lot of logistics to multi-account, and I don't enjoy that side of like having to go to a friend or a family member and say, you know, can I see your bank statements, or can you provide me with your wage slips? Can you take a picture of yourself, like holding your ID? Because I feel like a pillock, and I feel like a pillock as well. I just kind of want to be able to bet and then, you know, win or lose, you know, and that's that, and then it's done. So yeah, I did notice that was happening more in the last few years. But early on, it didn't really seem to happen that much. I think it's obviously, as match betting's grown, like multi-accounting's grown, and then bookmakers have to combat that themselves. So I kind of understand why it's a little bit frustrating for somebody that wins and just wants to bet.
It is, because, you know, you have that offer of maybe getting a £50 free bet, and people are trying to take it up with multiple accounts. And there's those people that are concerned about perhaps, you know, people from other countries or bonus abuse like that, and people being those companies getting taken advantage of. But I guess it comes to the territory when you start doing bonuses that you're going to have a process in place to protect them, and not just to treat all customers the same. Obviously, you've changed, you shifted dynamic, but even with the exchanges, are you having difficulties, you know, source of funds? These kind of issues are constantly coming up for some bigger Betfair players. And not just Betfair, and other exchanges as well. So it doesn't seem that they are immune from some of these issues we're facing at the moment.
I've not had any of that. I've been quite lucky, actually. The exchanges have pretty much just left me alone, which is good. And obviously, I do have that job on, you know, I also work as well. So if needs be, then I can provide them with some things.
Yeah, I think some of the feedback from other people, I think in a post from Joe Beavers, who's, you probably would know of him as a poker player and a bookmaker these days, saying that, you know, they were asking for lots of documentation, but also they weren't accepting evidence of his, not just income, but, you know, the money that he has, the assets that he has. And unfortunately, it just seemed to be catching some of the bigger firms. So are you concerned about the direction of travel then? You know, obviously you've changed your approach, but are you concerned that at some point it might just become too difficult if, let's say, £100 loss limits come in, or there's further restrictions placed on you?
Yeah, I have thought about it. And that's why, you know, at times, like I said, last year, I thought, you know, I'll just kind of give it my all, and then if it doesn't work out, I'll just move on to something else. So yeah, and then I also think just not having all your eggs in one basket, I suppose. Like, I, you know, I like the whole FIRE movement, the whole financial independence and retire early, and betting is kind of allowing me to kind of go that route. But I understand that, like, just not solely relying on betting as well is something that, especially like you say, with the direction that it's going, is kind of something that I should consider, and obviously try and kind of invest my money properly and maybe have other like side incomes that will just kind of help tick along if one day betting isn't there and the income that I make from betting just can't be made anymore.
Although not in crypto though. I was going to ask you about some of the bookmaker accounts you do have. Are you able to extract value from them? I know you've written about that in the past, or has that ship sailed as well? So what I mean is that those accounts that have been restricted by some of the soft firms, do you find certain weaknesses in that? So they maybe have limited you on certain sports, not others?
Yeah, so Bet365 are pretty good for that, I think. Like, my limited account, I think the maximum I can win is £200 on the Premier League. But on like lower leagues, you can win like 100 to 50 sometimes. And on some of the horse races, you can win 50. So like Bet365 offer quite a lot of value on horses, especially in the morning. If I have like I say, when I spend that hour and I'll be looking at other stuff, I'll also have, I'm like Odds Monkey up, which will just show me if there's some value in Bet365. So kind of limited accounts, I can get money down on there. And sometimes with they have like the normal odds, and then they have like the enhanced odds as well. And occasionally I find like value on some of the draws. They tend to offer value on them, like the lower English leagues on the draws quite often there. And then Sky Bet's the other one who let me like win up to £100, I think, on some markets. So yeah, I do use them, but they're not like a massive focus. It's basically if I'm kind of already doing something betting wise or trading wise and looking at the markets, I'll just kind of keep that open and keep an eye and see if there's anything worth betting. But I mean, yeah, you can make, you know, a few hundred quid a year, maybe a bit more on limited. So yeah, I mean, like if I'm there betting anyway, I might as well be picking up that value at the same.
No, it makes sense. I was interested in that topic because I think most people listening will have had an account limited, but it doesn't mean that it's done. And like you say, go and check out what you can get on. You might be limited on horse racing or greyhounds, but perhaps on, you know, football or some bigger markets, you might have some flexibility. So it's well worth checking out and taking advantage. So And obviously all those small amounts all add up towards your £1 million challenge. I think I was reading the stats are after 51 months, you're at £116,000, which is really impressive. What do you think? Are you going to make it to £1 million? And if so, which year, when do you think you might get there?
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice, but I'll be honest, when I kind of started the blog and stuff, I was just like, what sounds like a good name? It isn't just like my monthly P&L. So it's like, all right, the £1 million challenge, you know, that'll capture people's imaginations and sounds good. But I mean, if we can start making some numbers, I suppose, year after year, then it might be possible. But don't know, maybe give me 20 years and we'll see where I am with the fingers crossed.
That's five. Is that 5 years you've done 116,000?
Yeah. It's just over 51 months. Years, I think.
Yeah. So if the staking compounds and the profit compounds, you might be there before then, before retirement.
Yeah.
No, well, it is impressive, certainly, what you've achieved. And, you know, because like you said, you did start off when you first began, you know, you were a losing punter and you've had to adjust and adapt and find some edges. And although some of those had changed over the years, they still exist if you have the temerity to take advantage of them. And so keen to know, what's the plans moving forward? You've got the website, you've got YouTube channel, and you continue to do your betting and mix it up with some of the content you produce.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm continuing to kind of put stuff on YouTube every now and again, and I update the website at least once a month with my monthly P&L, and there's some guides there. Like, if I imagine most of your listeners are quite fairly sharp already, so that you probably know about match betting and arbitrage and stuff, but there's some stuff on pre-match trading and perhaps value betting that you might find useful. And if I find like a good service and I kind of want to test it out for my own betting, I normally review it as well. I'm not a review website, like, you know, it takes a lot of time to do a proper review like you guys do at the Smart Betting Club. There's a lot more to it than just kind of like 3 months of profits and loss. So don't do that many reviews. But when I see something that looks interesting, like BethBet, for example, last year, and kind of want to test it out, I normally send them an email and they'll let me do it. So there's kind of that side of it as well. And then with YouTube, it's similar, really. It's just kind of going through strategies that I'm using and anything that I find useful. And I think people will want to see, I kind of just put a YouTube video up.
No, I really enjoy reading your website, watching your videos, and I find it, you know, good to see, like say with companies like Beth.bet, I think it was, that was what I was tracking as well. And I did look at it myself, and I did remember seeing what you were doing on it. And I found it quite intriguing. And it's good to know sometimes when someone else is exploring a service that you are, just to see what their take is on it and where they're going. But no, I do enjoy it, especially from the perspective of, you know, how you've managed to build that profit yourself, and you're adapting and evolving and continue to find edges. I think it's really impressive. And I, you know, encourage people who are interested to take a look. So with that in mind, did you want to fire out some links, how people can find the website and perhaps get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. So if you just go on smartsportstrader.com, obviously there's all the guides there and my monthly P&L. So if you sign up to the newsletter, you get that every month, where I just kind of go through the strategies that I'm using and my P&L for the month. And then I'm on Twitter as well, which is, I think it's SM Sports Trader, I think. I'm not quite sure. But if you go on the website, there'll be links to Twitter and there's my email on there if you've got any questions or you just want to kind of discuss betting or anything.
Okay, great. Well, I'll slide in the contact details on the website into the show notes for those people keen to find out more or get in touch with you. And everyone, thank you ever so much, Ryan, for coming on. It's been a fascinating discussion, and you know, I wish you all the very best in the £1 million challenge and 2023 and beyond.
Oh, cheers, man. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this very latest Smart Betting Club podcast. If you enjoyed it and are keen to find out more on how the SBC service can help you and your betting, you can save 5% on the cost of membership simply by using the coupon code PODCAST. Visit smartbettingclub.com, hit subscribe, and enter the coupon code PODCAST to save 5%.